Drita Protopapa was born and raised outside of Boston. She grew up in a multilingual and multicultural household, so working in the language services industry came naturally to her. Drita is a native English speaker with native-like fluency in Portuguese and Spanish. She founded MAPA Translations, Inc. in 2007 with the goal of providing high-quality and affordable written translations, interpreter services, and multilingual voiceovers to businesses, nonprofit organizations, educational institutions, public schools, and individuals. Drita has over 20 years of experience as a community and medical interpreter and has been voicing projects in English, Portuguese, and Spanish since 1998.
We are back at Studio 4B. Here's former CNN broadcasting titan Dan Lothian checking the mics, warming his voice, and ensuring he looks impeccable despite this being an audio-only podcast. And making her dramatic entrance, double-fisting ice water and iced coffee, coach extraordinaire, guru of the voice and performance world, Lala Pitez. Let's find out what magical corner of the entertainment and media business they'll explore next. Voiceover, acting, broadcasting, journalism, agents, auditions. And now, get ready for Mic, Camera, Action, Talking Shop!
So you walked in and I almost didn't recognize you.
It's interesting, isn't it? An actor is always an actor because they love changing their identity.
Well, you,
just a little bit every now and then.
You could have walked by down the hall and I would have just said good morning, thought you were someone who worked there and wouldn't have recognized you. You had the glasses thing going on. Then you've got this fancy hairdo. And then you have a splash of color.
A splash.
Yeah, a splash.
I
just
feel like
in,
a
right?
V8 with veggies.
Yeah, it's like you were.
Splash.
It was like you bent over a sink that had purple stuff in it, and it just caught the end of your hair. I'm trying to be descriptive.
It's
so
that time of year. Thanksgiving's coming.
Exactly. So
the
you're preparing.
Boston autumn with the colors.
Yeah.
We're in the spirit.
Yeah, you could have been running through the woods, and some of the colors from the leaves splashed off on the tips of your hair.
Thank
you
for
go.
Noticing. That's very sweet
notice.
Of you. But I have to be honest
yes,
with you.
Go ahead.
I have been waiting all morning long.
Yes.
My dear friend and colleague who's mm-hmm. with us today, mm-hmm. who is one of the most colorful people I
she
know
is. Her
in
fingernails
so
actually,
many ways.
Her fingernails almost match your hair.
She's like the Spanish version of me. If I were, you know.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and as is my long-lost sister. So I'm so excited to have Drita with us today.
Yeah,
and
so great to have you here.
We haven't seen
studio.
Each other for years,
I know.
Too.
Wow.
When Law was like, do you want to do it over the phone or come in person? I'm like, is there even an option? Like, of course I'm coming in person.
No,
I got to see
great.
You guys.
Sometimes you do it over the phone. And when we have to do it that way, it works out. But it's great to have people in studio. And we can
it
look
is.
Across the table and see you. And
yes.
you're real. It's
I
not
am
an
real.
Avatar or
I
anything.
Am not an avatar that I know of.
So translation, I mean, you do a bunch of stuff.
Yes.
But translation, I guess, is at the heart of your professional life, correct?
Correct. I own a translation agency. I'm not actually a translator by training, but I have done interpreting, which we have a difference in my industry, which is translation is the written word and interpreting is the spoken word, right?
That's so in real time,
that's
live.
Real time, live, or over the phone.
Or over the phone.
Or video.
I'd like you define that for us, because I might. Myself am using those words interchangeably, and I'm
right.
saying, is that, I mean, am I using them correctly?
Right.
So there's
right.
the definition.
It's pretty, yeah, it's very common that people don't know that there's a distinction, and even in other languages, you know, they'll say traductor in Spanish, and they mean interpreter.
Right.
They don't say, for them to interpret is somebody who's like more like an actor who interprets a script, who interprets
yeah.
a role. Who,
mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting mm-hmm. kind of play on words, that, yeah, we translators are people that work in the written form and interpreters are working in the spoken form.
Right.
And you are an actor.
I
bring that up quickly because, well, first of all, you're an entrepreneur and an amazing female business owner, but also being an actor in this industry, I'd like to hear a little bit about how that plays in this kind of work.
You know, I'm really glad that you asked me that because one of the things I've thought about over the years is when I do interpret, and I do still do some of the interpreting work, and I love it. People have said, "Oh, you're the best interpreter we've ever had," and I think, really? Like, I don't do this every day, so why am I being called the best? And I ask them, I said, "Why do you say that? I'm curious to know." And well, it's like when you're interpreting, it's like you're just an extension of that person. You even take on their emotion and their expressions.
Ooh.
And I thought, you know, here's the difference is that I am an actor. So when I'm the interpreter, that's my role. And I do take it on. So if you're whispering and speaking softly, or, you know, you sound a little like a quiver in your voice, I try to mimic that. Mm-hmm. Or if you're kind of raising your voice and you're speaking quickly and you're kind of angry and, you know, I try to mimic that in the other language.
And isn't that how it should be? Because correct. I would think a lot could be lost if you're not interpreting with your body, your actions, your tempo, what the person is saying.
Exactly. You know? So I'll even where I position myself, I'll sit sort of to the side and a little bit back off the person. And it's literally they move forward, I move forward. They put their hands up in the air, I put my hands up. So I really try to mimic not just the spoken words themselves, but their emotion behind it and their physical actions. Right. And so it feels like literally you're in a shadow or an extension of them. And that's truly the experience of having an interpreter. You shouldn't feel, I mean, obviously, you know, there's another person speaking. So if I'm speaking for a male and I say I, obviously, I'm not male. You guys can see me. I'm not male. I am female, as far as I know. With translation, it's sort of a similar concept, except that you don't have any of the, you know, verbal, physical stuff. But the ideal translation is a written text that you would not know was translated. Mm. So if you read it and you just read it through as if it had been written in that language, you should feel that way. You shouldn't, it shouldn't feel awkward or the order shouldn't be funky. It should really feel fluid and natural.
Because a literal translation of what someone is saying, Spanish and English, would make no sense. You're just taking words out of order, or it could mean something completely different.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. I have a great example of that, which is the word go. So it's for a client that I was just mentioning to you guys, and they said, hey, Drita, what's go in Spanish? And I said, well, I don't know. And they're like, what do you mean you don't know? I'm like, well, what's the context?
Right. Oh,
and literally, it was a car that had morphed from being a car into the word go. And the line was, all of our used vehicles must go. So I said, well, now I know how to translate it because I know the context. So, you know, with spoken or written, it's really about the context because we have words that contract, compact. Mm-hmm. There's words that mean many things depending on how you're using them. And if you don't give me any context, I have no idea.
So important.
That's so interesting. And, you know, that harkens back to a flashback I have of my very first car, which was a Nova. And everyone...
And it never went go.
Everyone said, you know what that means in Spanish. I said, no, it means no go.
No go. And it didn't.
Pretty accurate.
No,
it was actually a pretty good car.
But it was. Yours was the only one.
Got a bad rap. So it sounds like you have a deep psychological effect, or at least you're creating this impact on your clients and your colleagues. I'd like to know, is that strategic on your part from an actor's perspective, or do you feel like that's just a part of your personality? You would do it whether you were an actor or not. What informs what?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think it's a little bit of both. I'm not sure how I would be if I weren't an actor, because I was an actor before I was an interpreter. Yeah. So,
and not every interpreter is an actor.
No, no. That's
in fact,
true.
You might be the only one. At least the only one I know
of. I might be one of the few.
Right.
I might be one of the few. So I think for me, I really, and this kind of relates to another really kind of intense topic, which is vicarious trauma. So if you think about when I said, you know, I speak in the first person, right? So if I'm talking about somebody's experience and let's say it's traumatic, or like in cases when we work for asylum or victims or people that are, you know, victims of abuse or sexual assault or violence, I'm saying everything in the first person. So if they say, I was attacked, I say, I was attacked. You know, if they say, I was abused, I say, I was abused. If they say, I was a victim, I say, I was a victim. So you're always speaking in the first person I, and it's like it happened to me, but it didn't happen to me. So I think being an actor and knowing that it's just a role, it's easier for me at the end of the day to walk away and say, oh, that was just a role I was playing. I was the interpreter at the asylum interview and I'm done with that role. Now the next one. You know, maybe the next one will be better. It'll be like, oh, I'm the interpreter at a parent-teacher conference for a kindergartner.
Right.
There's nothing traumatic usually it's about all, that. It's all really cute and we all cry because they made a cute drawing. You know, so it's like,
yeah.
You go from
the next
these,
Picasso.
Right. You're like, oh, that's so
but
cute.
But do you feel emotionally like you owe it to them or have to pay that extra emotional attention because you are speaking as them in the first person?
I think it is. I think it's really to do justice to their experience, to make them, like, let's say I'm interpreting for a parent, you know, and they don't really understand and they're at a school and in their country, they would never be invited to the table, right? They're not a partner or part of the team. Like here we talk about, oh, the parents are part of the educational team, right? Well, most countries, that's not the case. And so beyond a language issue, it's really a cultural issue. And I think that's where we bridge that gap of like, not only do you not understand the words that people are saying and the concepts are foreign to you, but the fact that you're just having, you're talking to the principal of the school, and it's not because your kid did something bad. Maybe it's to say, hey, we really want to help little Johnny or little Maria, you know, have better reading and writing skills. And so we're going to implement this program to help them, and we want to know your opinion. What do you think? Mm. And they're like, oh, I've never been asked that.
That is fascinating.
Right. Yeah. And so, like, one of the roles of an interpreter is actually to be a cultural broker or, you know, support. And so sometimes in cases like that where the parents are just kind of, they're sitting there and they're quiet and they're not saying anything. And I'm thinking the people at the school are looking at them like, oh, they're just not, they're disinterested. They're not engaged. So I'll say, oh, you know, the interpreter would like to add a cultural note here. Just so you know, parents in other countries are not asked to be a part of the team. So please don't interpret their lack of saying anything or their disengagement. Yeah, it's not. It's just that they're not really sure what to say or how to react because it's so strange to them.
So you know? You are almost acting like an advocate.
Yes.
On their behalf. That may or may not be part of the job, but that is a necessary aspect of what you're recognizing that could be communication or miscommunication.
And how much and how deep do you get into it, right?
Well,
how far
it.
Can you be involved, because are you then helping, are you leading it, right? Are
exactly.
you leading to maybe something that they wouldn't be thinking about or wouldn't want to do? So you have to be careful, right?
It's a very fine line of, you know, this is where common sense and, you know, maturity and life experience kind of comes in, and you just have to use your best judgment in that moment in that specific scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are times where I feel like somebody was being, I will say, discriminated against because of their language or maybe because of their skin color or their country of origin, and I felt that I had to speak up.
Mm.
You know, sometimes I use like a visual or a physical clue to get people to kind of, so sometimes I'll be in an interpreting session and they'll say, can you ask the person, can you tell the, well, and I'll say, no, you can actually tell them directly yourself.
Mm.
So if you'd like to just speak to them, and then what I'll do is I'll lower my gaze and I won't look at them.
Mm.
I typically do look at people because I need to see their mouth and their lips and their expression. So I usually want to see them. But if they won't take their gaze off of me because they feel like they're interacting with me, I will literally kind of put my head down and put my eyes off of them.
And that's to disengage for that moment so they don't keep coming to you for the answer?
Yes. So I'm not saying anything to them.
Brilliant.
Nonverbal.
And they usually get it, or I'll be like, you know, I'll just kind of point with my hands to the person and be like, you want to talk to them?
And?
And then sometimes you will say the interpreter. You have to speak in the third person then, because you're no longer, I'm not Drita when I'm there.
Right.
I'm the interpreter, neutral, no name.
You have to shift roles really fast.
Really fast.
You know, it reminds me of when someone is hearing impaired and someone unknowing or just not around people who are hearing impaired all of a sudden start screaming at them or talking louder, and they don't even realize that's happening. They think somehow they're adjusting appropriately.
Right,
if they
not.
Had someone like Drita there, she would help them teach them that that's not the way to go.
So we always like to, when we have our guests in studio or on the phone, we always like to go back to how it all started. You know, what was that thing that got you on the path to where you are now? And I was doing a little bit of research on you.
Oh, boy.
And maybe
I like this guy.
Yeah, so you could tell me if this is correct or not, but you were asked this question about, you know, kind of what got you into this. And you said, I've thought about it long and hard. And I would say that the most concise answer I have come up with is, this is what I was destined to do. How are you destined to do this?
He goes really heavy and deep.
Yeah.
You forewarned me, Law.
I cannot protect you.
I thought
his
he was
questions.
Just light and fluffy.
I was just
going
to ask you about Thanksgiving and the holiday season.
No, we get to that nugget. We get to it.
We'll get deeper than this, believe me.
Oh, my gosh. I think, you know, the best way I can answer that question is that, and Law probably knows this and remembers this, but my parents were from two different countries. My father was from Albania and spoke four languages. My mother was from Estonia and spoke four languages. They met in Boston, and we spoke English at home because that was the only language they shared. But growing up, we had people in and out of our house from Haiti, from Spain, from Russia, from China, from, I can't even tell you the number of countries and languages. So literally from a tiny, you know, tot, even before that, I heard multiple languages and was exposed to people from all over the world. So by the time I got to college, you know, language and people from other countries just seemed like a natural milieu to be in. Mm. For me, it was normal. Mm. And I even tell people in college, oh, you know, last year we had somebody stay with us for 3 months. They were from, you know, France, and they needed a place to stay because they were in. And they're like, wait, your parents just let complete strangers stay in your home? I said, well, yeah. And then I've repeated that. So I would say that base of exposure plus combined with, I guess I would say, a knack for languages, they come easy to me, made it so that, yes, I was destined to do this. I didn't get to it right away, though.
Talk to us about So what was the what were the detours, the off ramps that you took from the start?
Yeah, I mean, there
were
many. I won't bore you with all the details, but I will say that, you know, I worked in academia. I worked for nonprofits. I have a degree in public health. I actually have a master's in public health. I did a lot with the Hispanic community in Houston when I lived there, then in Holyoke as well. And when I was working out in Holyoke, I had a young woman who was working for me, and she's Puerto Rican, and she came up to me one day at work, and she knew I wasn't really happy with my, not my job, but my boss. My boss was one of those that kind of sat on my shoulder, breathed down my neck, not fun. At my age at that point, I was like, I don't really need that. And she came to me one day, she said, hey, Drita, I've been doing some moonlighting as an interpreter, and the woman who owns the company, Barbara, was asking me if I knew of anybody who spoke Portuguese, because she needs a Portuguese interpreter. I'm like, sign me up, I'll do it. And so I started moonlighting, and then Barbara and I became friends, and one day she called me and she said, hey, I want to talk to you. I said, oh, okay, what's up? Because can you meet at lunch? Sure. Sits me down in her car. She has a little handwritten note, and she says, here are the 6 reasons why I want you to come work with me. And I said, oh, okay, wasn't expecting that. Quit my job, gave him 30-day notice, and I went to work for Barbara. I was her first employee. She had a translation and interpreter service agency out in Western Mass, and that was the beginning of the end, sort of. And
I will say, that person completely, literally, helped change the destiny of your life.
Totally.
Isn't that amazing? That one person with that suggestion opened a whole door.
Well, and in many ways, I mean, we've talked about this, you know, since we've started this podcast. There are always these elements that are part of someone's story where, you know, they went to college for something, they had a passion for something. There are all these things that you come to the table with, but it's always this one element of, and then one day someone walked in and said, hey, have you thought of this? Or one day you went to watch a movie and you fell in love with movie producing, or you heard something on the radio.
Is it fate?
Right. There are these little things that you can't really plan for and end up defining your life.
That's incredible.
I look at it and I think, so I had the choice when I was moving back from Houston. I was in Houston way too long, but loved it.
Very hot there.
but I wanted to come back to Massachusetts because my parents were here. They were getting up there in age. Mm-hmm. And I had 2 options. I had this job in Holyoke, and I had a job in Boston at BU. But the job in Boston at BU had no parking, and it wasn't an easy place to get to through public transportation. Mm-hmm. So I thought, oh, this is going to be so complex just to get to work, and I had 2 young children. And so I took the job in Holyoke, and I really didn't want to be out in Western Mass because I didn't know Western Mass. I had no attach. I knew nobody there, and I'd still be an hour and a half drive from my parents. So it really is, you know, you have to wonder something as silly as parking.
Why things happen.
They happen.
Talk to us a little bit about your performance career. And does that play a part these days in your career? Or is that kind of on the back burner now? Where are you with all of that?
Yeah. So I think one of the things I did want to mention, too, about the choices and sort of the path and going off the path is that my parents were both refugees, political refugees. They came here escaping communism, escaping their countries. They, you know, they had that typical immigrant parent dream, like you must have education, you know, have a better life and get
a doctor
job.
Or lawyer.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't even say doctor. My parents were good. They did not say doctor or lawyer, thankfully, but they did. But I think my dad may have said lawyer. Okay, I take that back.
You got to make money.
You got to make money. Well,
you got to make a living. Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly. Right. You have to have a steady job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And journalism and acting now.
Or go to college. That's a big
go to college.
Places,
So I think that, you know, that was ingrained in my brain. So that was just sort of part of the path. But as a young girl, I don't even know if you know this law, I loved to sing. I loved to sing and I loved to act. And I would sit in the living room and play vinyls.
Yeah,
I'm that old. And I would sing and I'd sing and I'd sing and I'd think, I'm going to be a singer one day. I'm going to be an actress. I really thought I was going to do that. And of course, my parents didn't encourage it. No fault of their own, but that wouldn't have given me a stable living, obviously, in their minds.
Unless there was YouTube around at the time, you became a big YouTube star.
You could have been anybody could be a YouTube star now, right? Like, I would have had it made back then. So I think that stayed with me, and I think that it never has left. So when I had the opportunity when I was living in Houston to do on-camera acting and then voice acting, I jumped on it. And I said, well, now they can't tell me what to do. I have my own children. I have my own job. I make my own money. I'm living thousands of miles away. I can do what I want. But I think something inside of me always said, you know, the stability word was there. And so I didn't ever take the leap. And I still haven't really taken the leap. I think having my own business and starting this 12 years ago was the first step. So I have been doing voiceover for about 20 years. In English, in Portuguese, and Spanish. My first job, I always love to tell the story. I think Law does know the story, but I was in Houston and somebody called me up from the agency and they're like, hey, Drita, we have an audition for a voiceover job. And I'm like, oh, okay, it's gonna be my first one. It's for NASA. I'm like, wait, like NASA?
Wow.
NASA? And
they're
like,
yeah. First audition.
That's a pretty.
Wow. Yeah. I don't remember this story.
You don't remember? Okay, no. So it was for Portuguese and it was for the International Space Station video. So they had done it in English and they needed a Portuguese voice.
Wow.
It's a crazy story. So I drove down to the studio. They had a studio in, you know, video production, audio production studio in, at NASA. I get there as a female audio engineer, which is unusual, right? And back 20 years ago, that's really highly unusual. And in Houston, she goes, hey, Drita, so I just want to tell you, like, I don't know Portuguese, so you're going to have to help me edit the audio after we're done. I have no idea what she's talking about. Like, I don't even know what edit the audio means.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, yeah, I can help you with that.
I'm like, I don't know what
Fake it till you make it.
Exactly. Well, I figured,
you
like,
say yes.
Yeah. I said yes because I thought she really doesn't know Portuguese, and so whatever it is, I know Portuguese, so she knows that other
she
part
knows
of
audio.
It. I was like, I figured, okay, I'm going to help her with the Portuguese part. So I was there 8 hours. That check when I got it was huge.
Wow.
I was like, wow, I'm doing more voiceover. But it was an incredible experience. So
and that was your first gig?
That was my first gig.
That was your first gig.
Where do you
gig?
Go from there?
Do you have it? Do
yeah,
you
have? I have the...
Oh, I'd love to hear that. Our listeners would love to hear that.
I have to
convert
it.
Wow, that's fantastic. But you found a way, which to me is perfection as a business owner and as an actor, to integrate your performance abilities, skills, and passion into another passion that you have that actually offers the stability you were looking for. Right. And that to me is perfection when you can do something like that, you know?
I mean, it's really been, an amazing journey. And I am grateful that I can combine all of my interests and talents. And when I have, like, when I do gigs where I the project entails everything from, you know, translation, script translation to, you know, casting the voice actors and then sitting in on the sessions and then putting it on video. Like, we just did that actually recently for a client for GNC. They put two of their 1 minute TV ads into Spanish. So I was
perfect.
I was the person from A to Z that did that project. And I thought, this is what I want to be doing all the time because it combines every part of what I love. You know, even if I'm not the voice actor, I don't even care because I'm working with voice actors and I'm casting them and I'm coaching them.
Understand it, right.
You know, and I think that as a coach, it's, you know,
Law's
I have
having
that.
A side conversation.
Yeah, I'm like, just like a off, what do they call it, sidebar
she
conversation.
She was just so excited about that.
I was just
that,
saying, that, like, is that not the way I think? Exactly.
Well, and the thing is, like, why not have it all, right? You know, if you can.
Sure.
And I think that's really the goal now for me is I have a project manager who really kind of runs the day-to-day operations of the company, and he handles all of the translation requests and interpreter requests, and I'm really focusing on our VO division and also partnering with other video production companies to create projects like this that I just described from A to Z, where we literally take it and we say, oh, you've done that in English? Great. Or you haven't done it in English, you want to do it from scratch. That happens too. In fact, we did another project where they tried to, it was a training video, and they were trying to do the voiceover of the English version, but in Spanish. But again, like when I first got here, I told you guys, it expands so much.
Yes.
That people were talking like this fast, and they were saying the training, blah, 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 and like, you could understand them in Spanish, but it didn't sound natural. So they scrapped the whole thing, and then they did it a video from...
In Spanish.
In Spanish.
Yeah,
and
no,
guess who they hired as the on-set coach. So, you know, it really... When I have those moments of like, oh my God, this is what I love. This is what gets me fired up. My blood is pumping. I'm doing what I love. So,
you know, you reminded me of something. Years ago when I was working at CNN, I was overseas and flipping around and I came across CNN Español and I'm watching a piece and all of a sudden I see it's my it's my story. Mm-hmm. It's my story. And,
hey, but, that's me.
But that's not me speaking.
Oh my God.
So they took my story, which I guess this was a practice that happened all the time, and I just didn't know about it. And then someone else's voice was dubbed in speaking Spanish. Right? You didn't hear my voice and translate. It's just voice mm-hmm. dubbed over my mm-hmm. reporting. And I'm like, okay, what are they going to do when they get to the stand-up, right, where I'm on camera? Mm. So it comes to the on-camera part, and I'm standing there, and, of course, this Spanish voice. And then I go, I'm Dan Lothian, and yo soy Daniel Lothian at the end. And
That's awesome.
I was laughing at the whole thing.
Did you have an out-of-body experience where you're like watching yourself as a...
Right. And my thing is, first of all, I could have done it because I know Spanish, so that was kind of odd, but it was weird hearing somebody else's voice pretending to be me, especially when I was on camera. So anyway, that reminded me of that.
That is hilarious.
Yes, that's how technology and TV and translation...
One
thing I did want to ask you about, and here we go into research again, but you know, your industry in many ways or similar industries are becoming more and more automated. You know, So for example, the other day I wanted something, and this is transcription, and I wanted it to be transcribed into a second language because we were putting on-screen labels on the video, and I sent it off. And I hit send and hit pay on one of these systems, and I got up and sat down, and there it was. It was I'm not joking, it was the AI version came through first, and then I think whatever 24 hours later the real audio, and it was close. I mean, it was pretty good. So I bring that up just to ask you about how technology is either enhancing your work, helping you to do more. Or are you having to sort of reinvent yourself and your business because technology is taking some things away?
Right. Well, I think you kind of touched on it, but, you know, there are, I'm not going to name names, but there are online translation tools that are free and you get what you pay for. And I try to warn people that for very, like, some exceptions, those types of tools are okay. But if you're doing, you know, an ad, for example, or you're doing a legal document, or you're doing a script that involves, you know, multiple characters and double, mm-hmm. you know, plays on words and idiomatic expressions, don't do it because it won't function. It won't. Machines don't know how to interpret context or innuendos or double meanings. They just don't know.
Right.
That said, there is what's called translation memory software, TM. It's trademarked TM, that takes texts and remembers them and then looks at them the next time you put them in the system and says, oh, I recognize.
It's learning.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. I recognize that phrase or that term or that paragraph mm-hmm. is repeated in this document. So it takes that, if it's an exact match, and it just dumps it into the new document. So that's an amazing tool that actually really helps reduce time and cost for translators.
Mm-hmm. So you're seeing these elements, these developments as a help,
right.
not a hindrance
the
necessarily.
Translation memory software, yes. Mm-hmm. I think that's a huge help because it really... actually helps accuracy, you know, so you're not having, how did I translate that last time? It helps create glossaries. It really literally is what it says, translation memory. So it keeps a memory bank of what you did last time. And then every time you upload a new document into it, it says, oh, wait a minute, I recognize some things here. And it then, you know, puts it in that new document and stores it. So that's an amazing tool. There are, you know, some other things out that are there that I think are in development, and I always say, like, there's no real replacement for a human interpreter or a human translator.
And we talk about that all the time for actors, because VO actors are always worried about, am I going to be taken over by a computer? We said, well, listen, you always need the human behavior.
Right.
You need those nuances that a machine probably can never do.
No.
Right?
No.
So you have to just believe in that,
right.
you know?
I still believe in it. I think I'm a little old-fashioned, too, and I like that human touch. And I think that
you know what a lot of people do, though, you know, when we meet people online, oftentimes they'll say to us, and Carol knows this too, they'll say, with all due respect, Law, it's fine, but I really want to see you in person. I really want to come and be in the studio. Now, if they can, they can. If they're in China or with Wisconsin or, you know, they can't. But if they have a choice, they almost always want to be in person.
Right. Mm. We need that. We
need
that. We can't live in a bubble. And I think that's why machines and robots and all this great stuff. I mean, it is wonderful on some level, but I think there's nothing like this. Being in the room with you guys, talking, being able to hug you, look you in the eye, feel the energy. There's nothing that can replace that. And that does also translate over into the work that we do. And as you know, with voice acting, you really don't have much. You're in a booth. You got a mic. And maybe you have somebody on the other line directing, maybe you don't, and then you have the audio engineer. So you've got very little to work with.
Right.
So if you don't, if you can't conjure up the human emotion part and the feeling and the put the props in front of you and maybe, you know, bring some props with you, a machine can't imitate that. You know, they cannot like tell a story the way we tell stories. So I do a lot of learning for like programs for kids. So reading and helping them with reading and writing. And you're reading a passage and you're, you know, it's almost like a mini audiobook. You can't. I can't imagine a machine doing that. Mm. You know, if you have to play a character and the character gets excited or they're sad or they're, you know, whatever it is, there's no way, you know, there's just no way. I'm not worried about it.
I wish we had
so
like
sweet.
5 hours to talk to you, but we're going to bring you back on.
Maybe
for
we bring you back for a series.
Part two.
Yeah, part two.
Yeah. And, you know, there's tons and tons of stories I know you can share about what's coming 100%. Up next for you. But what an awesome pleasure to catch up.
Thank you guys
Thanks
for
so much for
incredible.
Educating us and inspiring us.
Very inspirational.
Our champions have left the field and left you with the tools and techniques to get you working in the biz. Be sure to pick up your copy of their latest and greatest book project, 50 Ways to Mega Crush Your Media Career, found on Amazon.com. Also, be sure to rate this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you found this fine product. Want to talk directly to Law and or Dan? Find them at LittleParkMedia.com and LawLapidesCompany.com. See you next episode of Mike, Camera, Action, Talking Shaw!